So are you going to perform?
No. I did sing the Beatles Paperback Writer, which is public on my Facebook wall, if you want to see that.
I did see that, actually.
Yes, I was in the Dolly Parton wig. I've got purple hair normally, but I had my full-on blonde elbow-length wig on with some star-shaped glasses.
You look stunning, I seem to remember.
So I guess it was more of my attempt at organic marketing, you know. Let's talk about books in a really...
My name is Paul Harvey, and this is Life, Passion and Business. We're about helping you explore, finding your passion for life and the work that you do. But it's so much more than that. It's about finding clues to the big life questions. What does it mean to be successful? What is the meaning of life? If you're looking for more, then join me on this journey, where together we will discover through interviews, tools and tips, how to live life full of meaning, passion and purpose. My guest on this week's show is Colette Mason, and she is a facilitator of books. Have you ever considered writing a business book? Many people dream of writing a book, a memoir, a fiction piece or a business book. With all of our modern technology, it has never been easier to become a published author. The number of books published every year continues to rise. Book sales in the UK in 2017 was 5.7 billion. But even with our electronic readers and gadgets, the popularity of the printed word shows no sign of diminishing. I have to admit, I have a few Kindle books myself, but I cannot enjoy them anywhere near the same as the physical book. And there is a certain sense of pleasure to be found when I look up from my desk and see books on my shelf. So, with books ever more abundant, has our view of authorship changed? No. The people that have written a book have a certain status. The book gives them credibility in their field that is difficult to match. Now, Colette is a master of the world of business books. But I'm going to get back to Colette in a moment, because I like to use this little section here of the podcast to tell you a little bit about my world and what's going on for me. So I noticed over the last few weeks I have mentioned my morning routines, and I thought it was time to start putting those things out there and exploring those routines, so get some feedback on them maybe, or literally just share them with you. So I'm going to create a series of mini casts, I'm going to call them, where they will be probably up to 20 minutes talking about my routines. So we're going to talk about morning routines, we'll talk about exercise, maybe food, maybe business, who knows where it will lead. So it's my podcast, I can do as I choose, and I'm going to do this. It's going to be fun anyway. So those little mini podcasts will be available on the podcast app, but they'll also be available on the website, as with everything else is. So I will tell you more about them as they come out. But the first mini cast will be about my morning routine, and it will be available next week. So I hope you subscribe to this podcast and you'll get an advance notice that it has come out. Anyway, let's get back to the book lady, shall we? Colette is known in my circles as the book lady, and she has created a formula that will allow someone to create a book in a very short space of time. And she tested the process well, and it helped, as I said, 10 authors publish best-selling books. Since that, her program has been instrumental in over 3,000 titles from different corporate entrepreneurs. So this is a well-tested process. So how did it all start? Well, for many years, she was trusted to produce and publish information for the UK government and big global corporations. There was a high-profile element to the work, knowing that millions of people were reading what they had produced, and it was quite a buzz. But apart from the occasional public inquiry on the report, the authors never got a credit. So the information was always attributed to the organisation or the department, and it was never relevant to the people that spent the time at the coalface researching and writing it. So this got too frustrating in the end, so she jumped ship and set up her own publishing company. And she set about writing her first book. She did that in just 14 days. Well, that was the first draft, and then After some time, it was edited and eventually published. And then she wondered what it would do. Well, she was invited to speak at a conference in CERN, Geneva. She got invited to do workshops in Africa. She got contract gigs in Australia. She appeared on the radio, in articles, newspapers and magazines. That book opened doors that she did not know existed. Colette is all about process and efficiency. So I hope you enjoy the conversation with Colette Mason. Welcome to Life, Passion and Business. And it's another day in Scotland, another fantastic broadcast with someone who I've really been looking forward to talking to, actually. I have on the line today Colette Mason. Now, I have known Colette for a long time. And we used to have our friendly Skype chats where we would kind of poke each other to get stuff done, which was quite good fun. Anyway, today, Colette is on the line with me. Now, she is always busy. She has her shoulder to the wheel pushing her project because she is into getting people to write books. That is her passion. And now I know that's her passion, so we're going to explore that and find out why it's so important for her to do that. So Colette, welcome to the program.
Hi Paul. Hi everybody.
It's great to have you here and to see you because I'm using Zoom today, which is quite nice. So Colette, how did you get to this place? I mean, what is it that drives you to kind of be getting people to write books?
A couple of reasons, really. I think one is that a lot of people have got really good information inside their head that they should share with others because it can help them, console people, encourage them. It can do all sorts of wonderful things. It's like a magic wand, really. And I saw a lot of people getting stuck and not getting it finished. So because I'm really into processes and systems and doing things the easy way, then it made sense to combine the two things together. So unlocking people's potential and making that as simple and as easy as possible for them.
Mm. So how did you get to that place? Because I mean, obviously you come from a techie background.
Yes, definitely. Since the age of 11, I've had a keyboard glued to my hands pretty much 16, 24 hours a day, depending on what's going on. So I've always loved information, computers, and, you know, mixing the two together.
Mm. And that's what you, is that, was that your early career?
It was, yes. I had a few pretty nasty jobs, buying ingredients for a food manufacturer and a few bits and pieces like that. And then I went into IT in about 1995 full time. Yeah.
All right, 1995. So you've been, in which case you've probably seen the growth of this technology from the beginning, pretty much.
Yes, definitely. Certainly, you know, there was only like email and stuff at university and a few chat groups and stuff. So all the growth of the internet, you know, sort of, I saw all that come along. Yes, I was lucky to see that.
Mm-hmm. So were you always interested in writing books? I mean, have you written your own book?
Yes, I've written several. I'm just finishing off one. I'm relaunching another one, and I wrote some others that were to accompany products, you know, like if you get Jason Vale's juicer, you get a juice book to go with it, so those sorts of things. So I've written quite a few myself. I've forgotten the point of the question now.
Well, I was curious, have you always written books? I mean, because obviously modern technology makes it easier, yeah, to write books. Going back in the day, you know, 1995, even 2000, writing a book was actually, you know, being a published, yes, author was quite something. And that's, yes, probably in 2000, actually being published, you'd have to find a publisher.
I think so, yeah. Or you'd have to go to a printer and spend a lot of money on getting books printed and that sort of thing. So it has become a lot easier. That's a double-edged sword, of course, because people can produce absolute rubbish, to paraphrase.
And, you can say dross or whatever other word, yeah, you want to use. I'm happy if you want to be expressive as you wish, Colette.
So the good thing is, if you've got a good idea, you can share it and you don't have to go around trying to persuade somebody. But the bad thing is, any old idiot can produce any old stuff. And I'm sure we've all got those 5,000 word Kindle books with the, oh, and you can buy my course bit at the end of it. It's like, oh, you know, there's no gatekeeper for quality anymore. So as long as people can be their own gatekeeper for quality, then I think it's a brilliant thing that you can get your book done just like you can get a t-shirt or a business card printed. Why shouldn't a book be the same type of thing?
I mean, they have sort of become the modern business card.
I'll have to paraphrase again.
Please don't paraphrase. If you disagree with that, please say
Because, I mean, obviously, we have a mutual friend, Dan Meredith, and he says his life took off when he wrote a book. And he ground his way through a book because he had to get it done in, like, 30 days.
Yeah, I think if you're just writing your book to position yourself as an expert, then please don't bother. Because usually those books are just horrific. It's a bunch of blog posts shoved together. It's written for the author, and there's no thought for what
it's a vanity project.
Yeah, absolutely terrible vanity project. Yeah, it's either too highbrow because they want to look really academic, or it's super basic and it's just a ragtag bunch of ideas that's long enough. So I really, really hate business.
I wish you could see Colette's expression at this point, because her expression says 1,000 words on this, if not more.
I did look like I was gurning. I need sort of black pudding around my neck, put my bottom lip over my nose, and I'll that's really. I hope the wind doesn't change because I'll stick like this. Yeah, I just find those type of books horrific, and I think people can spot them a mile off. You know, they can just see somebody who's written a book for themselves versus somebody who's written a book to share some useful information.
Yes, absolutely, and I guess a book, like anything, has to have a vision and a purpose to it, as you say.
Yeah, absolutely, and if you think of it. You know, I do like to think of them as magic wands, because you can do something magical in somebody's life with a few ideas or a few techniques to try, encouraging them. And so if you think of it in that sense, what can I give people that's going to give them superpowers? That's what's going to go in my book, rather than can I just make it long enough?
Yes. So I still don't get why you're so driven by that.
Because I think, you know, also seeing the internet develop, there was all those horrible things, you know, like article marketing and spinners and backlink wheels for SEO. And there was all those horrible things where there's just millions and millions and millions of pages to be turned out just to bump up SEO ranking. And they were really poor quality information. And I think the internet's awash with poor quality information, and people are looking for that source of trusted information that's actually going to work. And that was one thing I wanted to help people share.
And that's very true. As I'm constantly reminded, we can find out anything we choose to on the internet. It's the information is already available for us. It's just we just don't have any clue how to collate it properly. And I guess that's what the difference is these days in terms of anyone who can make a difference in the world, is if they know how to marshal that information and apply it in a certain way or help people apply it.
Yeah, it's like a cookery recipe. You should be able to get the starting point, follow the instructions, and come up with the result at the end. That's what should do for people.
Hmm. So that's you're passionate about that, but you work. I know you kind of will happily do all sorts of weird and odd hours. So what's that about? What's that driver to do those hours that you do? I mean, I know you even shift your wake up and bedtimes so that you can be more productive.
Yes. It's partly to help my waistline. You know, in the evening, it's really easy to sit with a glass of wine, cheese and biscuits and watch a pop set. That's super tempting, and I would love to do that, but I'll be 20 stone and I'll be needing somebody with a wheelbarrow to get me around. So one of the reasons I get up early is so that I don't end up eating and drinking for entertainment, which is one of my vices.
Okay.
And then the other thing is, of course, it's very quiet in the morning. So
just for the sake of our audience, do you want to say how early you get up?
It's slipped a bit over the summer, but ideally I like to get up at 4 o'clock and go to bed at 7:30 at night. So people go, do you want to join me at an 8 o'clock webinar? No. Not at all. It's like 2 o'clock in the morning for me. You know, it feels like really, really strange time. So
do you find your body has to adjust? Do you do this over a period of time? Because it's like if you want to live a life with other people involved, that feels quite really quite hardcore.
I'm lucky I can move it around. You know, when I was at university, I'd get up at midday and stay up till 3 a.m. So a lot of eating and drinking at night for that.
Yes.
So I could move it around. I'm not like, I haven't got like a bio clock or something like that that makes me a morning person or a nighttime person. I can just make it fit what's going on.
I think I'm a bit like that myself. Whenever I go to bed, I wake up like 6.5 hours later.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I could probably do something similar to this. Not that I do. I'm quite disciplined in my bedtime habits these days. So do you have a morning routine? Are you one of these people that has this? I mean, I do. I have quite a strict morning routine now, but I'm just curious, do you?
I would like to. Normally, I'll get up at 4 o'clock. I'll eat something really small. I'll watch Coronation Street on my Vices, but it's just 20 minutes. And then I'll go and get the bus at 10 to 5, be at the gym for 20 past 5. So there's nobody on the equipment. I can use what I want to use without waiting. And then I'm back for 7 o'clock and I can do what I want to do or need to do, probably more appropriately. What I need to do at 7 o'clock can begin. In an ideal world, I'd be stretching and having a pint of water and doing all those really good things for you, looking in the mirror, punching the air, saying, I'm brilliant, you know, but realistically, that's not going to happen. Maybe the stretching at a push.
No, you've just broken the myth. I was sure I could just see that. Yes, I'm brilliant.
Yes, I've got to do my manifestations in the morning. No, I don't. I don't know.
So okay, you've got this thing. So have you always been passionate about this kind of stuff that you do? And I sense you're more passionate about the tech than something else, because I can hear you get really geeky sometimes on conversations.
Yes, I like to make things as efficient as possible. The whole reason why mankind invented computers is so that we couldn't get angry and frustrated doing things the slow and difficult way. That's the whole point of having computers.
No, angry. No, computers are made to design people get people get angry. Ask my wife about it. She's always getting angry at us.
And so if I see somebody reaching for a hammer and got that look on their face about a computer, then I just naturally want to stop and help them. I can't, it'd be like seeing somebody about to get run over. I feel this need to step in and show somebody the safe way, the easy way to do something or whatever. You know, for marketing purposes, like this is probably commercial suicide, but for marketing purposes, you have to tell people you do one thing. But if somebody had trouble with video or installing a hard disk or audio or fixing a monitor up or projector screen, I could do any of those things. But I, you know, because I just love to help people with technology, really. But I just do the books because otherwise marketing, nobody knows what I do, if I'm honest. Mm.
So what's the current project? I mean, how do you bring this to the world at the moment?
I've been beavering away building some online courses because I've been working with people one-to-one, which is lovely. My micromanaging sense can look after them and keep them on the straight and narrow. Mm-hmm. But of course, I can't help enough people. You know, I could only do 5 or 10 people in a year that way. And I thought, well, more people need this help. So I thought, well, I'll have to make some sort of course and make it so it's got my Rottweiler accountability built into it. So that's what I've been doing over the last 6 weeks. I've had people doing something for a week and now they're doing something for 30 days. And I'm doing that as a pilot to check it works okay. And then I'll scale it up in 2019. So that's what I've been doing. It's been good because I've enjoyed being a programmer again for a bit because I used to be a programmer. So it's given me some creative outlets as well as building this, you know, asset for the business. It's been two things have been fun about it.
Hmm. So that sounds like I know it's going well because I see people's comments around, because obviously we share a lot of mutual friends, so I can see I can see the people are actually are beavering away at it.
Mm. Yeah, I think I was used to looking after one person, and I'm a perfectionist, and I get a lot of stick for being a perfectionist, but you know, I like to think I'm more of a Rolex, like a high standard, and we do things, you know, to a certain level, and I won't drop below Rolex standards. I'm not interested in being a Seconda or a Timex watch. That can be for somebody else. So that's why I was looking after people one-to-one, because I could make sure that everything was done as good as a traditional publisher would do. So when I had 125 people to look after, I thought, oh my giddy aunt. How on earth am I, you know, how can I look after these people and not let anybody down and not let standards slip and not tell them something's good enough when it isn't, you know, because their reputation's riding on their book. And if they put out something, like, Colette said it was great. Maybe I didn't say it was great. Maybe I just didn't see you because you were in the herd. So that was a big worry. But, you know, most people got most of the way through, and 31 people got their book to a standard where I thought, yes, this is worth you taking it to the next level. So I was really pleased with that, you know, and I wasn't just paying lip service to the standard. It was actually good enough.
But that's raised an interesting question, isn't it, really? Because, I mean, before we actually started recording you, we did talk about the 80-20 rule and the fact that people may choose to want to write a book, but may not want to actually put the effort and work in to actually achieve the goal.
Yes. Yeah, so that was one of, I think there's quite a few myths around there. Some is that, oh, you must slave away for a year, otherwise your book's not going to be any good. I mean, if you were writing a book on like a biography of Henry VIII, you'd probably need a lot of historical evidence and dates and facts and figures. That is going to take a long time. But if you're just sharing what you know, like perhaps you did a book on how to create a podcast, that's not going to take a year to organise. And so people think, oh, I must suffer for a long time for this to be any good. And I thought, well, that's not true. And then there's a lot of other people who just shove together their blog posts in 24 hours, go, woohoo, finished. And then people see things done really quickly and think, that could be pretty naff, and I don't want to put my name to that.
Now, I'm going to ask a daft question. Is there a gender bias here? Do women have this kind of thing, a book should take 9 months? and men kind of go, yeah, no, knock it out in a weekend.
I think it just depends on the person.
Because it is, you are birthing something here. This is something that is very personal. Yeah, all right, it may be a factual book, but I guess most people get quite attached to them.
Yeah, it's their professional expertise written down. It's their ethics and values, their experience, their nurturing attitude, everything appears in this thing. And you see the 1-star reviews on Amazon and you think, well, I don't want to be tarnished with any of that. And so it is quite stressful, but there are ways and means around that. For instance, getting friends and family and potential customers to read it first, so that you don't have to find out it's bad when it gets on Amazon. You can find out it's good beforehand and get it right beforehand, and then let the world see it. So you don't really need to be frightened of the 1-star reviews if you just make sure quite a few people read it before your Amazon customers. You know, so.
I had a friend who's his whole family have got first class honours degrees, and his sister put a thesis together for her doctorate, and the whole family read this thing for proofreading, but didn't understand a word of it.
Yeah,
they could just about say where the commas needed to go, but as with any other words in the thing, it didn't understand a thing.
Yeah. But usually if it's somebody's expertise, I always say to people, imagine you were meeting a friend for a coffee who really wants to know what you know, and they like you, you like them. You're just going to sit there for 2-3 hours having a few coffees, and you tell them what they need to do to fix the thing or to get the thing that they want. And it doesn't need to be any more than that. And if you bear that in mind, it suddenly becomes a lot more achievable. And I think everybody's had one of those breakthrough afternoons with a friend where you just share a few bits and pieces, and they adore you for it because you've solved something that they've been struggling with for a long time. And all you're doing is writing that down.
That's interesting, because it was Delora, who was one of the guests, who's the Mindsex mentor.
Yes.
That title came out of a meeting. They were in a bar with after an event somewhere, and some guy started talking to her, and she started coaching him. And he was so blown away at the end of it. And everyone said, you're the Mindsex mentor. Because obviously sex came into this conversation. And that's how it stuck. And it's just like that, just from that one event. So it's true, as you say, when you sit down and talk to people, sometimes magic happens.
Yeah.
And I guess what you're looking to try and do is bottle it in a book for people.
Exactly. Yeah. And then that's where your authority and people want to touch the hem of your robe, as I call it, you know, that's where your authority comes from. It's because you wrote this really helpful thing, not because you decided to do it as a project.
So what comes first, the decide to do it as a project or the want to kind of like, because that's an interesting thing, that kind of thing. How does someone come to the idea, I need to write a book?
I think you just know in yourself that you can stop other people struggling, and you just want to write that down. And I think another thing is, you know, if once you get to a certain level in your coaching or whatever, you can't keep helping people for free. You can't keep, and not everybody's got the money to work with you. So another way, it's a kind of a nice, practical, ethical way of helping people get the result. So all the people I work with really have written the book because they just can't see other people struggle.
Yes.
And if they make money out of that and somebody joins their paid group or whatever on the back of it, then that's all very well and good. But the primary driver for my people has been doing the right thing by others.
And from a marketing perspective, I would call it a value ladder.
Would you? I would. Well, I'm the antichrist of marketing. I wouldn't call it anything like that.
I would call it a value ladder because it's like it's the first stage of someone's. It's the first low-level commitment that someone can make towards your work. If they like something, they can buy into this.
Yeah.
And get a sense of you.
Yeah. So what people say, well, my book won't be different, but it will be because it'll have your personality and your take on things. That's what's going to make your book different. And by putting your personality in it, people warm to you or not. And then you, like you say, you get more authentic followers who are interested in
it. It's an interesting thought there, because it's like I have been around this industry for a long time. Mm. And there's a lot of things I don't do because they're all done out there. It's like everyone, you know, that's him and that's him and that's him. And I can, as soon as I hear someone speaking, I can go, well, that's Dan Kennedy and that's so-and-so and that's so-and-so. So I hear all this stuff that's just being regurgitated from somewhere else. Mm. So from my perspective, I wouldn't write anything like that because I'm going to go, well, what's the point? Everyone else has done it. I'm just going to be waving someone else's flag, really.
Possibly. You know, it just depends on your audience, I think. And you're an advanced reader of those topics as well. So most books are going to be aimed at beginners. And so they haven't got that. They haven't read around the subject, or they wouldn't be able to say, oh, that's Dan Kennedy. They'll just think, oh, I like that idea of what keeps people awake at 3 o'clock in the morning. And they get the bile in their esophagus or however. To somebody else, I mean, I would quote him for that because everybody's heard that little, those 12 questions. Most people have heard of those if they've done copywriting. But, you know, it would seem new to a brand new person, and you don't need to worry about, you know, is this old hat? It's, no, well, it's my take on the hat. You know, this is how it's going to be.
But that is the thing, isn't it? Like, you know, it's like, has everything been written? Are there any genuine new ideas?
Well, I suppose, well, you could say like emerging technologies, but even things like electric cars would have been predicted many years ago, although they feel quite new now. Or it's different combinations of things. Sometimes people have got two, like Delora, for instance, she's got two ways she can weave in what she does to create a result for people. She's not just a coach or a sex therapist. She's in between the two. And some people can combine a couple of disciplines together and come up with something quite unique.
Mm. So what is success to you? Because obviously that's, you know, we were sold this model of success when we were at, you know, well, you were at university and I was told, yeah, get a job, get a good job. And, you know, and then one day you can retire and enjoy yourself.
Yes.
What is success to you?
I tend to just measure it on how much I get done. I don't measure it on how much I earn or, you know, how big my empire is or anything like that. I just tend to look at how much I get done. And if I'm not doing anything, then I start to feel a bit flat and disappointed. And if I'm not doing anything because I'm on holiday, I start to feel flat and disappointed. I can only really measure, is it worth getting up today if I'm going to get something useful done at the end of it? I just haven't got a free wheel setting. Just don't have one. So other people might think that makes me super successful. It's more of a case of, well, the shark has to keep swimming or it drowns. I have to keep busy or I drown in boredom and disappointment.
So there's no real success factor or measurement for you?
No, I don't need to work anymore if I don't want to, which is kind of nice. You know, I did all my years of doing horrific large IT projects, some of which ended up in private eye. And so I paid off the mortgage and I didn't have to worry too much about what I was going to do from there on in. So there's no money, doesn't drive me at all. I use it as a part of a hurdle-a-thon, as Stan calls it, to get to decide if I want to work with somebody. If they haven't got enough money to work with me, then it probably means they're not committed enough. But the fee itself doesn't necessarily mean anything to me at all. It's just literally an obstacle to check how keen somebody is.
Hmm. So what other passions in life do you have then?
Oh, I've got a very, very bad Trivago and Skyscanner habit. I've just come back from Ireland. Next week, I'm going to Wales. A couple of weeks after that, I'm going to Luxembourg, and then I'm going to Poland. Then I'm going. So I'm always doing something, and I just look for really good bargains. I choose my flights as and when they're, you know, the best deal, and then I find somewhere to stay, and I go and explore and go around castles and museums and art galleries and things like that. So that's one of my hobbies. The other one is learning things to do with the computer. So for me, it doesn't feel like a job. So I'm like, well, how does that work? How can I make that happen? And so I like dabbling with those sorts of things. And I suppose music is another thing. I have singing lessons every other week, and I've done that for 2.5 years. I like listening to music. And
are you going to perform?
No. No, I'm not going to perform. No, I did sing the Beatles Paperback Writer, which is public on my Facebook wall if you want to see that.
I did see that, actually.
Yes, I was in the Dolly Parton wig. I've got purple hair normally, but I had my full-on blonde elbow-length wig on with some star-shaped glasses.
You look stunning, I seem to remember.
I look like something. Yeah, so I guess it was one of my attempts at organic marketing, you know. Let's talk about books in a really funny way, so I don't look like going, oh, I can help you with my book and here's my group. I never want to be that person ever. I'd rather have no customers than be going, would you like to write a book? Come to my group. It's like, no. No, it's not going to happen. So singing around in a Dolly Parton wig with star-shaped glasses on, talking about books seemed...
So what's the singing for? Why do you sing?
I was going to do one of those experience days where you get yourself recorded, and I thought, well, I'll have a couple of lessons, see how it goes. And then I ended up clicking with the teacher. We got on really well. We're about the same age, like similar music, both very into music. So it was nice being around somebody like that. I haven't really got any friends in real life, particularly, that like music as much as me. So that was nice. And also it was because I do such long hours, I had to be missing for like 3 hours every other Friday, because I've got to get there, have a coffee, go in, come out. And so it was a way of forcing me to have free time, a bit like you get a personal trainer and you go to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
It forced you to do something else other than whatever else you were going to fill the time with. So there was an element of that to it, and also confidence, I think, because it's not easy to do. You do think people will judge you and everything. And the first few lessons I did, I was just petrified, but you know, I carried on with it. And so it gives you quite a lot of confidence if you can do that. It makes things like public speaking or appearing on shows like this a lot easier, because you've already done that a lot of out of your comfort zone on a regular basis.
Yes, it does actually make a difference, getting out of your comfort zone a bit, doesn't it? It has to be practiced, those sort of things.
Yes, definitely. I don't like, I suppose when I say I measure about what I'm doing, most of those things are outside of my comfort zone. It's either tiring or overwhelming, or I haven't got a clue what I'm doing, but I'll keep paddling anyway. So yes, most of my day is probably spent striding out of my comfort zone, waving at it as it disappears on the horizon.
So I see you often talk about Bake Off. What's the fascination with Bake Off?
Standard, very simple standards.
For my international audience, Bake Off is a program about, it's a baking competition. Mm. A Great British Bake Off, and very famous it is too.
And you have to turn up and make, you know, 24 little cakes, and they all have to be identical. We have to make a pie, and none of the filling must dribble out when it's cut. And people get very, very het up about it. And I like seeing other people have really high standards, because most of the people I meet are of the, oh, just get it out there, it doesn't matter mentality. And to me, that's like, no, you wouldn't just, if it was somebody's 50th birthday, you wouldn't just get a party out there. Oh, well, there's a sausage roll, good luck, mate. You put effort in from time to time for things that matter. So I like seeing them get very stressed out, because it doesn't make me feel alone.
So if there was something that I should have asked you and didn't, what would that be?
Crikey.
What was the one question I haven't asked you?
I can't really think. We covered lots of things. I can't really think of anything specific to add in.
No. Okay, so if you wanted to tell people something, what would you say to them?
I would say, whatever it is that you want to be doing, go and do it, because you only live once, and you can't afford to faff around sitting on the edge waiting for things to happen. You've got to be, that's why I'm doing the 18-hour days sometimes. It's because if you don't do it, then nobody will do it, and you won't get what you want out of life. That's what I would leave people with, I think.
And what do you want out of life?
I think to help others most of all, that's the thing I get the most joy out of, experiencing things with others. You know, I'm thinking, in, you know, when I go on my holidays, my Trivago trips, I would like to take other people along with me rather than just uploading a picture on Facebook and saying, oh, yeah, I did this. You know, it would be nice for somebody else to see the same view, or, you know, be at the same bar or do some fun things, because I just enjoy making other people's lives more fulfilled. That's what I think, really.
Hmm. So I will put all the links for how to get in touch with you on the blog. What are the, what's the first steps you want to do? What would you, if for people listening, what do they need to go and do if they want to write a book?
On my website, I've got a page called Get Started, and that gives everything that I do in bullet point form, no steps missed out, no, you know, everything that you need to make a start is on there. So that might be nice for people. Also, I've also got a How This Works page, which has got a very big This Is Not For You banner at the top, and a bunch of things that I tell people, you know, that I don't work with people if they do this or do that.
I remember you writing that and you saying, is this too harsh? And I went, no, it's not harsh enough.
Exactly. So, you know, if you want to write a fiction book or a children's book or recipes, this isn't for you. This is about business process. Then I get people saying, is this about, you know, can I only write books about marketing or how to choose a warehouse? I'm going, no, that sort of business book, you know. It's all good. It keeps me busy. So there's some free advice on there, so you can see if you like how I go about things. And there's lots of blog posts that should be useful, because I did the keyword research and then wrote around those. So let's hope I've hit the mark with that.
Okay.
And then there's some information on different ways I can help. So there's free help, like book templates and a few guides, all the way through to I sit with you full on Rottweiler and we get it done in 4 days, which is quite extreme. So all that information's on the services tab. So it's all on the website. It's been going for 2 years, that website. So if I haven't got most of the things covered by now, then just shoot me, because yeah, it should be on there.
Knowing how thorough you are, Colette, there will be nothing missing.
Oh God, you say that now. Yeah, so it's
okay,
all on there.
So look, we've covered all sorts of in this conversation today.
I think we have, haven't we? Yes. Yes, it's been good fun. Thank you.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, this funny old thing, life, is kind of like, we all take it very, very seriously.
Mm.
But I just wonder, for you, what do you think it's all about? What's the meaning of life? And you cannot say 42, because I know you're of that age.
No, I'm no Hitchhiker's references. I think you just have to make the best of it, don't you? You know, you try not to dwell on the bad stuff, and you make the most of the good stuff, and you keep putting one foot in front of the other, till you end up with your Zimmer frame and you can't do that anymore, you know.
So how do you keep going? Because that's one of the things you said earlier, is that, you know, you don't actually need to work if you didn't want to. So how do you keep going? What is it that keeps you moving forward?
If you're not doing anything, I don't like people who do nothing. They irritate me. So that's another motivator to keep moving forward. I don't want to be a slacker who just sits around watching Jeremy Kyle on the TV or Jerry Springer or whatever. So that would keep me moving. So there's things to be done, things to learn, places to go to. You know, you've got to keep, I try and engineer as much good stuff into life as I can, because sure as hell some bad stuff is going to come and pull the rug from under you from time to time, which you try not to schedule in. So I always try and schedule some fun stuff in, and that keeps me going as well. So yeah.
Colette Mason, thank you so much for your time with me this morning.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you.
That's all right. And I know we will talk again sometime, because that's what we do.
That's what we do, yes.
And that was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Colette Mason. And as with all my guests, her details can be found on the website underneath the podcast. So please go there and find out how Colette could help you get your book published. So if you're interested in the minicasts or shorts, make sure you subscribe to the show or on your app or in iTunes, and then you'll get instant notifications when it becomes available. And there's a thought. If you are on iTunes, please give us a like, comment or review. It really helps the show to get a thumbs up in Apple land. Now, if you're a regular listener, I want to thank you for coming back. It's such a pleasure to have this podcast growing the way it is. If you have any questions about the show or you have a story you'd like to share, do get in touch, and you can do that at the website or on Facebook. I am very easy to find. Anyway, it only remains for me to say thank you for your time and attention, and I will catch you later.